Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast, Jeanette. Lovely to have you.
Thank you.
Super excited to get into the conversation, but I guess, you know, here at Label Sessions, we know you for your kind of innovation, kind of experience design and kind of banking operations, I guess, in the financial sector, especially within the kind of in Nigeria, in the kind of international markets, but in kind of you were used to be based in Nigeria. I wonder, we've probably kind of brushed over a lot of things. So could you possibly share an introduction with us about yourself, about kind of your work and, you know, the backstory that gets you up to the present day, up to this point?
Absolutely. I'm happy to share that. Thanks for having me here, Keisha. I'm Jeanette Edo. Like you already know, I started my career as an operations associate way back in Nigeria with a top-tier bank, United Bank for Africa. And then from there, I was able to walk the ladder up and then left as a branch operations manager before joining Access Bank, which is also one of the largest banks in Africa by customer base, as an assistant branch manager. I think being a branch manager and even an operations branch manager helped me with my leadership skills and also helped me with customer experience skills as well, because banking operations exposed me to attending to customers, ensuring that their needs are met, even going beyond the, you know, going the extra mile as well, beyond my expectations, and just having fulfillment when I satisfy a customer. And then even though banking operations was something that I really liked, for me, it was, you know, monotonous, it was routine. I needed something that made me think more outside the box and also for me to leverage my critical thinking skills as well. And that brought me into product management. And that was when I was asked to head the innovation team at Access Bank. But prior to that, I had been involved in project management as well, majorly a huge project of the bank that I was able to save the bank millions of dollars in ATM reconciliations. And that led me to work in data analytics side of the business in terms of banking operations as well, ensuring that processes are optimized. How can I leverage that data? And then how can I also bring in my skills as an operations associate way back in my formative years in my career, and then ensure that processes are improved and customer experience is improved as well and customer needs are met. Working in as an innovation manager really helped me to understand building user-centric products. Working in that role, I was also tasked with the responsibility of driving the innovation journey and the culture of over 15,000 employees. So that was a huge task, including, you know, 9 African subsidiaries as well, where I was able to also develop the innovation strategy for our subsidiaries. It was a very exciting role. However, I was headhunted by the Nigerian Interbank Settlement System, that is NIBS. It's Nigeria's foremost switching company. It's owned by the Central Bank and the banks in Nigeria, over 25 of them, in driving the product development and innovation journey as well. I was the head of innovation and new product development. It was a more impactful and tasking role in that it helped me and exposed me to more of the financial ecosystem, working with all the banks and working with fintechs as well, card companies, in driving user-centric products as well, especially in emerging tech around facial recognition, artificial intelligence, and even cloud technology. The pandemic was a call, like a wake-up call for me in terms of pursuing my graduate studies. I've always wanted to pursue my MBA, but I never thought about the time I would do that. I wanted to pursue it in the US because of the educational advancement here. And then that was when I started thinking about going back to school. The pandemic really gave me time to reflect on what are the next steps in my career? Been there, done that. What is the next best thing I want to achieve? And that was when I applied to schools and found myself in Arizona State University, W.P. Carey School of Business. I recently graduated from my MBA program with a major concentration on information management, focusing on artificial intelligence and cloud. It's really been an exciting two-year journey for me. I just graduated and it's been exciting. Right now, I've just been busy exploring Web3 blockchain technologies, learning more how I can leverage that in terms of payment innovations, which is my background, user experience as well, banking as well. How do we like bring in these technologies into financial sector and learning more about that and also driving AI strategy as well.
Oh, wow, fantastic. And I kind of, when we were talking before, you mentioned kind of Africa Rising. I wonder if you could kind of explain that a little bit. And if, you know, is that what's keeping you the most busy at the moment? Or is it kind of...
Absolutely. Africa Rising is a baby of mine. Not like baby, you get what I mean? Yeah. I founded it in 2020 as well during the pandemic. I had attended a virtual conference and I noticed, you know, the gender gap in the diversity of the panel in the conference as well. I knew so many women were doing a lot of great things as well, especially during the pandemic. Women-owned businesses were driving the economy. And I didn't find that very exciting. And I wanted to just move the needle in that aspect in my own little way. And that was when I founded Africa Rising Women in Innovation. It's a community of innovators championing the cause of African and New African women in innovation. So we tend to champion them, majorly focused on businesses, girl child education, STEM education as well. That is also something that is also keeping me busy besides Web3 and blockchain and AI strategies.
It's a lot of juggling with very kind of heavy topics as well. It's quite inspiring.
It is. And I enjoy doing that. So I don't see it as work because they're all passions of mine. So yeah, makes sense for me.
And you must be having such kind of interesting conversations in kind of all of those things. I was wondering, you know, within all these conversations that you're having within the innovation or finance or kind of leadership fields, I wonder what's getting you excited right now? Are there any emerging opportunities or challenges that kind of you're seeing that you think are going to be important for your work in the kind of the next few years?
For sure. I am particularly excited about the transformative impact of AI, sustainability, blockchain, technology and product management. For me, I think that these innovations are creating product avenues for product development, personalization and ethical considerations, you know, that were previously unimaginable, if you get what I mean. So for emerging opportunities like AI-driven personalization, and that is the ability to create highly personalized user experiences through AI, making it more accessible, allowing for more product offerings. Those are conversations and interests that I'm beginning to, you know, be particularly drawn to. And also sustainability in product design. I had attended a conference for product managers recently, and that was one of the topics that was really talked about. How do we drive sustainable products, especially now that user behaviors are changing? Users are demanding more environmentally sustainable products. How are product managers pushing themselves to innovate in such categories, especially how do we reduce waste? How do we use sustainable materials, you know, carbon footprints and all of that? And then another fascinating thing, just like I had mentioned earlier for me, is the integration of blockchain technology. Studying about blockchain technology and researching about it, I've been particularly interested in synthetic assets and regenerative finance, that is REFI, and also thinking about how do we use blockchain, especially in terms of fintech payment innovations, to improve transparency, security, and traceability as well. For example, having, you know, cybersecurity attacks, 51% attacks, how do we leverage cryptography? How do we leverage two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication as well in blockchain technology to ensure that our fintech products are safe for our users? And then another passion of mine, especially with my concentration in my MBA program on artificial intelligence, is ethical AI and data privacy. with, you know, how ubiquitous AI has been over the years, it's very critical that we start thinking about AI ethics and privacy as well. How do we build products that are mitigating bias as well? And I feel for me as a product manager and for all product managers as well, it presents an opportunity and a responsibility for them to be able to lead developing products that have these capabilities as well. How are they thinking about that? I love how Apple has approached their data privacy in terms of the app tracking, for example, to ask, allow app to track. So that feature shows that commitment to ethical data and usage as well, and also creates that trust within customers that are using these products. So those are the things I think. In terms of challenges will come in terms of, you know, balancing innovation with trust. You know, we're building these products, creating these personalized products with AI. How do we balance innovation with user trust? How do we know when to, you know, draw the line in terms of user privacy and trust? We've heard about recently in the news about, you know, antitrust policies, privacy, GDPR as well, and those policies within Europe. How do we make sure that our customers or the users that we are building these products for are protected as well? And that would also lead us to navigating regulatory landscape. How, as a product manager, am I aware of, you know, these regulations, even though I'm in the US? Am I aware of regulations in Africa, for example, or Europe, for example? How am I integrating them into my products? So these are the thoughts and the things that I'm really excited and interested about. And I'm being very conscious of that when I'm building products as a product manager, and conversations also happening within the industry.
And I find it super interesting how, you know, a lot of people, when they talk about what kind of conversations they're having, AI is mentioned all the time. I know most of my episodes that I've recorded on here, everyone seems to mention AI at some point. And it used to just be, you know, it's something new, it's something, you know, it's ever changing. But now I feel like everyone's having those conversations, like you're saying, about, okay, we should start thinking of the ethics of it now. Like, it's not as new as it was before. Like, it's been around for a while. We should start asking the kind of the deeper questions. And kind of, yeah, it's interesting how you said that. I kind of echoed that as something that you're thinking about, and also kind of what you're hearing other people are thinking about too. It also seems like it's so important as a product manager, right? Because a lot of people are assuming that with kind of products that have kind of new things, newer things evolve, such as like AI or perhaps kind of the ESG sustainability aspect, they think that these products, if they're going to choose them, they're almost giving up something, whether it's, you know, privacy, whether it's kind of returns or anything like that. But it's almost up to you guys to be like, no, we are reassuring them that there is research going into it. It's not, they don't necessarily have to be giving up something, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that was what I had mentioned about innovation, drawing that balance between innovation and user privacy and trust. So we don't get lost in that. We have, you know, product managers already thinking about, even though we're automating products as well, embedding AI into products, but you still find customers that need that human interface as well. So you now find products like chatbots where it's not, initially when chatbots were being built, you were just, you know, stuck with the chatbot right there, you know. But now companies are starting to realize that even though we are integrating these chatbots into our customer experience or support systems, we also have to think about the human factor of that as well. Humans want to also speak to an agent. They want to have that human feel as well. And then you find that balance happening in between products that are built now with chatbots where, you know, at some point the chatbot would ask you, would you want to interact with a human agent? So I think that's where those balances come in as well. In terms of user privacy as well, making sure that users still have control of, you know, their data. Like I had mentioned, the ATT feature at Apple, where if a product, you know, the app can ask, you want the app to track or you don't want to. So you give that consent. So I think those are where the game changing is happening as well. And in terms of bias, algorithmic bias, why in my favor some users, for some it frustrates them. We've had stories about that where, you know, the algorithms are not in favor, maybe like content creators or for an app, for example, in terms of personalization or what is being fed into the data as well. So I think those are the nuances that are being dealt with and improved on for products. It's an emerging tech, even though we feel like we are so used to it, but it's still emerging. We are still learning things. There are some countries that are still developing their AI strategies. That are still learning how do we think about this, and some companies that are still trying to figure out their AI ethics. How do we make sure that our data is transparent and the source of our data as well? How are we getting our data? Those are very important conversations.
Probably linked to that, if thinking about leaders that you're talking to or leaders in your field, what questions should they be thinking about, or what questions should they be asking themselves now? Is it kind of the ones that you were talking about just before, or is that kind of other questions that you can think, yeah, they should be reflective on this kind of thing?
Yeah, I think leaders in product management, the kind of questions they should be asking now, besides what I had talked about in terms of data privacy, sustainability, AI integrations, personalization, and all of that, I think another question leaders should be asking themselves and asking their team as well, the organization, is how do we build future-proof products? So future-proof products in terms of how does this product sustain us in the future? There are companies like in the autonomous industry where for like maintenance or updates, they have like, you know, cloud software updates that is being integrated into the cars where you don't have to change the car. It's just been integrated so that it's future-proof for the future for you to be able to use that. It's not something that is still technology. So those are the kind of questions I think leaders should be asking. How do we build these future-proof products? How do we ensure that our customer journeys are future-proof as well? Customer behaviors are constantly changing. Customer preferences are constantly changing. How do we ensure that the products that we built in 2023 is still viable in 2024 and can be scalable as well? Another question that I'm also thinking that comes top of mind is how do we also build resilient products? The pandemic, for me, really taught us a lot in terms of resilience. For companies that were already, you know, they already knew what their digital transformation looked like, what they really wanted in terms of their digital landscape. Already, it was easy for them to pivot. But for companies that weren't, were still trying to figure that out, it was very difficult for them as well to do that. So, for example, if you have companies or small businesses that, you know, already had an online store, for example, it was easier for them to do that. Or banks that had like, you know, mobile apps or like, you know, online banking. So it was easier for their customers to use that instead of coming into the banking hall to conduct their transactions. So I think that thinking of those concerns is very prevalent for leaders to think about in terms of resilience as well. And then in terms of their workforce as well, the talent, what skills are we building for this talent as well? How are our employees or our talent reskilling themselves and upskilling themselves? As a product manager, like I mentioned, I'm upskilling myself in terms of Web3 and blockchain because I know that I have to start thinking of how to build products around that as well, thinking about use cases for that. Even though I'm not building them now, but it's something I'm already, you know, being proactive about. And then, you know, new talent that might come in terms of their new talents like prompt engineering, it's new. So in terms of that, leaders are already thinking of like, you know, the workforce, the skills that our employees are having or have already. How are they improving on that as well to make sure that we have that skill set that at the time when we are building future-proof products, we have the talent that can guide us accurately and correctly to ensure that our customer products are still user-centric and able to satisfy their preferences and behaviors as they change.
Out of curiosity, you mentioned it's kind of the workforce that should kind of, or the workplace that should kind of suggest that and make sure they're being aware of kind of how to kind of upskill, reskill their employees. I wonder, do you think that that's kind of the that's the work the workplaces need to do that, or is it also on the kind of the person to be like, okay, this is coming up, I should probably learn something about that. I wonder, what was your journey about wanting to do kind of an MBA and kind of learn about all these new things? Was that a kind of a you decision, or did someone kind of say, you know, this is coming up, you should really probably think about this? I wonder, what was your journey on that?
For my journey, it's both ways, both the organization and personally as well. In my organization, they had this, we had this culture where we were continuously upskilled. You were mandated to take some courses to improve your field. As an innovation manager, I had to take courses on design thinking, for example. And then I also took courses on entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship innovation management. And I think what happened at that point was taking those courses made me see that I needed to learn more. And that was when I started thinking of pursuing an MBA, because I felt like there were still a lot of for me to learn in my field, that I it wasn't just about learning on the job. I needed to go out and see how these, you know, frameworks are applied. I needed to gain that international exposure as well, to understand how these are applied as well. So for me, it was both ways for me. Personally, I am very, you know, forward thinking. I'm very big on personal development. I'm always thinking of how do I improve myself as a talent in an organization? How do I make myself more useful and valuable, even though we might think no one is, you know, irreplaceable. But there is a way you can do your work that your organization would want you to continue as well in that area. So for me, it was both ways. I was always, you know, very thirsty for knowledge. Let me put it that way. I always wanted to learn what's happening. I would attend conferences. I would think about like, how are people thinking about this? How are my fellow product managers, you know, talking about this? So I think for me, that was really helpful in that sense, to be able to understand that I could do it both ways, learn on the job and also learn with courses and also pursue a graduate program to make it better for me.
Now, kind of thinking, you've probably learned a lot, both in, you know, your official courses and kind of also with picking up things moving to the US and bringing stuff over that you learned in Nigeria to kind of teach people over here. I wonder now, thinking about yourself as kind of a leader, as a person, and what makes you tick, like how you think. I guess my question is like, how would you want people to describe you and the way that you make change on a good day, on your best day?
That's a really great question. I think for me, what makes me tick is being visionary and strategic and building products that are impactful. That is what I would say makes me tick. I'm very visionary. I think steps ahead. How am I improving myself, for example? And in that sense, I find myself being, you know, very approachable when working with my team or even other teams as well. I'm very empathetic in that sense. And, you know, I want my team to grow. So passion and drive in terms of like building impactful products, this product that we are building, what is our objective? Why are we even doing this? Who are we impacting? How do we measure success? What are the KPIs we are thinking about? Which, as someone passionate about, you know, sustainability as well, how are we driving sustainable products as well in building this product? And then for my team as well, mentoring drives me as well, because I also got that as well, you know, growing in my career, getting mentorship, even though I didn't get that early enough. I think that's one thing I would have done earlier if I had known. And so getting that mentorship now, making sure that I engage, I network, I ask questions, I have the curious mindset to be able to know what's happening and where I can improve as well. That has helped me as a leader. And then besides that, knowledge as well, learning from others, from their tank of knowledge, from their river of knowledge, experiencing, just getting to know what lessons they have learned so I don't make the same mistakes is something that I continually try to search for Because I feel that over the years in my career, if there were things that I would have done differently, would be, you know, asking these questions earlier on to understand lessons learned or how people were able to navigate their careers. But I did it, you know, just by myself. But even though I did it well, but it could have been, you know, I could have done it earlier, if you get what I mean. So that is what makes me tick. Vision makes me tick, being very strategic in my goals as well. Making sure that they're smart goals, you know, they're measurable, they're strategic, and the results are defined as well. That is what I would say makes me tick.
You know, you've now moved to the States, having gone from Nigeria, and I was wondering, with the mentors that you have, the people that you meet, I wonder, is there different leadership styles of where working between kind of the two places, or do you think kind of innovation? Is innovation, it kind of mean the same thing everywhere?
I think it's the same thing everywhere, but it depends on how it's structured. For some organizations, the innovation can be structured internally. So it's in terms of like entrepreneurship, that's internal innovation. While for some, they source innovation externally. That's external innovation. In the companies I have worked, I've been opportune to experience both sides of the curve. So both internal innovation, which was what I was driving in my previous job, and then external innovation, you know, collaborating with our external partners as well, working with our accelerator arm as well to also drive innovation internally. So I think it's the same thing, but in some companies, it might be called a different terminology. It might not even be called innovation. It might be called digital transformation, for example. It could be called product management. There are different terms for that. But the main objective at the end of it is that we're trying to improve how we drive our products. We are changing our use cases to be product-led use cases, for example. And then thinking about that mix, once you find that, you know, yourself being a product-led organization, you kind of like change your roadmaps, how you're thinking, how your strategy is going to work, how you're driving your user journeys as well. So for me, I think it's the same thing, but driving it might be different for different managers, but we always have the same outcome. It might not be the same results or KPIs, metrics, but there's always that same outcome that we want to improve a process, or we want to optimize it, or we want to drive a new product or a new process. There's always something that ties around product development, product improvement or process improvement, whatever that is. But hyper automation as well, how do we improve all our processes such that it affects other aspects of the business to improve, you know, bottom line and optimization as well.
On the way that you've done a lot of innovation within companies, like you just said, and you've seen the way that kind of things are done, the way that things are made, you know, products and everything. But I wonder, when you look at the industries you've worked in and in the wider world as well, are there any opportunities that you see that kind of reinvent the way that things are done for the better, kind of a way that you think, oh, you know, we've innovated in this way. I think that everyone else should do it too. Anything like that?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I think what comes to mind for me would be the health tech industry, healthcare industry as well, especially with technologies that like AR, augmented reality, and virtual reality. The other day, while I was, you know, playing with the Apple Vision Pro, I was, you know, just imagining how things can be made differently with in terms of healthcare. Even though robotics has started to become, you know, very ubiquitous in that space, but not as much as we would expect. However, you find doctors or surgeons that are already like thinking of how to explore these technologies to improve the experience for the patients or also improve their surgical processes or methods. There are stories of how, I think I was talking with someone the other day and was telling me a story of how a doctor was, you know, trying to perform, he had surgery to perform and he wanted to test that out first. And used a Vision Pro to make that happen. Just getting to know the heart of the patient first, and then trying to see how the method that he wants to use for that surgical procedure would work for that. So I think that there are still use cases that can be explored. It's not being explored like a lot of how we would want that to be done. But I think it's a very great opportunity. I see use cases that could improve lives as well, product research, medical research as well, and then improving patients' lifespan in terms of maybe they're being diagnosed with some certain kind of ailments as well. And then the energy industry is another industry that I find fascinating as well, where I think AI and predictive data analytics can be leveraged as well. How do we use predictive data or, you know, data analytics for like, you know, battery storage or renewable energy to also like optimize the energy consumption as well? The energy industry, you know, it's very complex. It's not something that can be done overnight. It's an industry that has lasted for decades and decades. But I think that at this point, there is room for innovation. There is room for leveraging these technologies that other industries like finance, like Medicare is already leveraging as well. So I think the energy industry and the healthcare industry, those are two industries that I think that can leverage these technologies, even though healthcare, it's like way ahead of the energy industry. But I think that the energy industry needs to do more in terms of, you know, these innovative products for data predictive analytics and all of that.
Yeah, are we excited to see where it goes and kind of where they go with it? Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. And I guess kind of have a few, we do a little segment at the end of kind of this podcast with some final quick fire questions. There's only a few of them, but yeah, I guess the kind of first one would be, you know, do you think your friends could explain what you do to a stranger? Could they do that well?
Yeah, I think so. I think they can. I think they can. I see them saying something like, Jeanette thinks of an idea and then thinks of how to manifest this idea and then thinks of how to build it such that you use it to be happy, you know. Yeah, it makes you happy, whatever.
Are you happy with them saying that, or is there anything that you would kind of almost want them to say?
I think I'm happy with them saying that, especially as maybe when they're asked to explain it to a five-year-old. Maybe see me as a Lego builder or something, you know, like, yeah, that's what I would think. But I know there's already something that they call me. They call me Madam Innovation.
So, oh, I love that. I love that title.
Yeah. Yeah. So they already understand my passion for innovation, anything innovation. They're already like, you know, asking my input or my advice or sharing articles with me or, Jeanette, have you seen this? You know, things like that. So they already kind of like know my sauce and my vibe. And I appreciate them for that as well. Yeah.
You mentioned before that you had lots of mentors, you've had mentors, I guess, either from them or, you know, other people in your life. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
That is an interesting question. From personally, not from my mentor, I can't remember who gave me this advice, but it's an advice that has really stuck with me. And that is for me to drink water and mind my business. And it's been... like one of my bodies reinvented it to say, stay hydrated and mind your business. So that has really helped me. I really tend to focus on what I want to do. I'm very laser focused. I don't allow distractions to interrupt in my day-to-day or like, you know, the goals I've set for myself. And that has led me to all the achievements I've had and, you know, my career trajectory as well. So I think that has helped me over the years. It might sound very cheesy, but it's an advice that has really helped me to ensure that my eyes are on the goal all the time and not lose focus. I might get tired on the way, but that doesn't mean that my eyes are off the prize. It just means that I need to recalibrate or take a break, rest, and then forge ahead as well.
And that's advice that could be used anywhere and to anyone as well. It's quite kind of foundational advice, which is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Amazing. My next question, I only have two more left. So the first one being, you know, what's one thing that you couldn't live without?
My family. I love them to death. I couldn't live without them. Their support has been very instrumental to my success. Even, you know, over the past 2 years that I relocated here, my family's support has been very instrumental to my success as well. My mental, you know, balance, health. Yeah, so I wouldn't, you know, my family is key for me. I love my siblings, my parents, and I don't joke with them. So I think having them as a great support system has helped me over the years, both personally and professionally. If I have any doubts, my sister is a call away. I can just call her. So it's that gift. We didn't choose to be siblings, but we chose to be best friends. So it's a gift I really appreciate. Yeah, so like, having that support and that love, I don't joke with it at all.
And do you call them often?
Yeah, I spoke with him yesterday. Yeah.
I feel like it either goes both ways. People either call their family a lot or they're like, oh, it's on my to-do list. I need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a four-hour call. It's always long.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot to catch up on. No, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. And so, you know, I have one more question for you, and it's a question that everyone on the podcast gets asked. It's a bit of a weird one, but on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you and why?
Oh my gosh, I'm not weird at all. I'm a one. Yeah, I'm not weird at all. I think I'm just friendly. You know, like super easygoing, not weird. I guess weird in sense of like, why is she doing this? Or, you know, I can be predictable. I know Jeanette would like this, or, you know, people that are close to me or people that are not even close to me, like just looking at me and seeing me or having interactions with me. I'm always like, you know, super like, I always, you know, want to network with people, ask questions, just get to know people. And I think that's why I love traveling as well. Just, you know, having that opportunity to meet new people, learn about new cultures. So I'm not really weird. I'm more of an adventurous person than a weird person. Yeah, that's the word. Adventure 10, weird 1.
So yeah, I know, I like that. And I feel like you said, kind of people know what you like. There's not mm-hmm. any unpredictability there. They're like, okay, I get the vibe. Yeah. I get what Jeanette's about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, giving your insights as to the kind of the innovations within lots of different spaces, not just the kind of finance sector as well. It's been incredible having you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Keisha. It's been incredible.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.